With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business?
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You can't win anything with kids.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
How much are the players looking forward to Arsene Wenger arriving?
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Phoenix Five. This week I'm joined by the whole five. I've got Adam Miller with me. Hello, Adam.
How's it going, lads? Sorry I weren't here last week.
Welcome back. You was missed. David Graham.
Hello, Paul. You all right, mate? You all right, lads?
David Holland.
How we doing, boys? Nice to see you all again.
And the one and only Lee Harper.
Well, go on.
On this week's show, we'll be talking about controversies in football during the 90s. There were so many controversies to go through. We're going to do a countdown from 10 to our number one most controversial moment. So I think that's enough of an introduction. I'm going to start from our number 10 we all spoke about, which was the David Batty versus Graham Lassow fight. So it's back in November 95 during a Champions League encounter between Blackburn Rovers and Spartak Moscow, where Graham Lassow did something remarkable when he punched David Batty. It was remarkable not only for the fact that two were supposed to be teammates, but also because Lassow punched a tough-tackling Yorkshire hardman and he lived to tell the tale. Who remembers this? Graham, I'll start with you.
I remember it, mate. They're both playing in the Blackburn side, the side that won the Premier League the year before, wasn't it? And they went into the Champions League. They were struggling. I mean, I don't think they got out of their group, did they? But I remember, I've had a look back as well, but it's just as I remember it. They both fell over each other, didn't they?
Yeah.
And next thing you know, Spartak Moscow had the ball, and then they turned the cameras, and Graham Lassow threw a left hand at David Batty. And apparently it broke his hand doing it as well. It was just weird to see it, actually watch it, because you had Dyer, remember Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer a few years later, similar sort of scrap. And then you had, remember one with Bruce Grobbelaar and Matt Manaman. That wasn't as bad, but it was still a scuffle. But yeah, to see two players actually having a fight on the pitch. I mean, it was a proper left down as well by Lassow. I mean, didn't know Batty did it, but he kept coming forward. But yeah.
Holland, anything to add to that one?
Yeah, I loved it. It was a naughty little left hook from Lassow, by the way. But I think after he'd done it and how Batty reacted, I was thinking, he must have been thinking, oh man, I done it then, but then I'm going to see him in a change room after. Batty was going to mash him up. I know he was, and Batty knew it. You know, he got a naughty little left hook in as he went in, because he didn't expect it. But I think Batty just all game thought, oh my God, he's chinned me. So I thought just Batty just knew he was going to batter him when he got back into the change room. But yeah, it was mad to see. Graham mentioned Bowyer and Dyer. I loved that one because Bowyer's face, he is raging in that one. And it does make you laugh.
He ripped the shirt as well in that one. He ripped Bowyer's shirt.
Yeah,
as well.
He did. Yeah, but Bowyer's getting pulled away and you just see his face. He's absolutely raging. And his face just, I'll never forget that. His face just makes me laugh. But yeah, no. You know, like Batty was just shocked that he got punched by Lassow because I can't imagine Lassow was much of a fighter and he's hit him with a naughty little rabbit punch.
About that, obviously, with Lassow and Batty, mate, have you heard of stories about Batty? Like, so he's like, apparently people say that he never owned a mobile phone. Like he was proper like secluded from the outside world.
So apparently, David Batty actually said that he doesn't even like football. It was just his day job. Have you heard that, guys?
He just turned up training. He didn't have any interest in football other than playing it himself. And then he would just keep his kit on, just get in his car and go home. He didn't want to interact with anyone.
Some players said that he used to live in like a caravan.
I heard that. Fame's not for everyone, though, is it? Do you know what I mean? Some people absolutely love it. And some people, and you know what I mean? It could, it's like us, how we treat our jobs. You know what I mean? It's just a job. You do your work, you go home. So some people just see it like, we think it's amazing because it's football, but it's not for everyone.
Rumours are the last time he was seen was in, I think it was 2002, somewhere up in Yorkshire, and he's into BMXing and rally riding. He's a proper like country bumpkin now, apparently. And I've always said I would love, because no one's interviewed him. He hasn't been seen since, I think, 2002. I just think, yes, as Holland said, I think some people, it was a job.
I'll tell you what, no, we won't bear not. If we ever get an interview with him, don't say anything about Lasso chinning him, because he might turn on us.
Dave, you've got to find him first, mate.
That's what I mean. That sort of thing will live through forever. He's been chinned on telly, but he hasn't shown his reaction. He probably killed Lasso in the change room after, but that's not on video. So he's always going to be known for getting rabbit punched by Graham Lasso.
Well, let's move on then, guys. So Robbie Fowler's White Lion celebration. So after an equaliser in the Merseyside derby in 1999 against Everton, Fowler got down on all fours and simulated sniffing cocaine, using the touchline as his prop as a response to taunts from the Everton fans over supposed drug abuse. Fowler received a four-match ban and a £60,000 fine for bringing the game into disrepute. Miller, what do you think? What do you remember about that controversial celebration?
I thought it was very clever of him, the Playboys of Liverpool, the Spice Boys, and their culture at the club at the time. I thought it was a message to the media. That's what I thought it was. I thought it was clever. And
that's a good point, man. It's true. I never thought about it. I don't look at it like that until you just said that.
Well, he only got a four-match ban, which I think was quite surprising at the time, because obviously goal celebrations now, you don't get anything of any character anymore.
You can't even take your top off now.
Well, you can't take your top off, can't do anything to celebrate. So if he does it, it'd be a 10-game ban. Graham, anything to add on the Fowler celebration, the controversy surrounding it?
I remember back at the time, I think the more, not so much the drug celebration itself, I remember a lot of the controversy being kids copying their idols. I mean, your back paper lines about cocaine and whatnot. So cut a long story short, it's like the message is kids, Robbie Fowler does drugs. He's so cool, I'll do it. I remember that being slightly more controversial than him actually doing it himself, being an adult and whatnot. But yeah, I thought it was, drugs aside, I thought it was a great celebration. Miller said it's very clever the way he done it. Basically done it, and it was never sort of heard of again, was it really? I haven't seen anyone else do it, have you?
Holland?
Well, I said it in the first episode, I loved it. But I did not, not for the message. I mean, the message is the message, but yeah, for a bit of, you get two types of people in the world. People that take it, oh my God, it's going to ruin my kid's life because Robbie Fowler. And people see it a bit funny, a bit laddish. And that's how I took it. But yeah, I thought it was a great celebration. I can't see it catching on, but I see the fun side of it. I'm not going to go on, oh my God, it's going to ruin people's lives. And people have got drug habits now because Robbie Fowler sniffed the fucking line on the side of the pitch. But there is people out there that would.
But do you not think, as Graham said, in terms of the idol, we've all got kids now. If one of the players did it now, and then your kid walked in and said, "What's he doing?" Because obviously a 9-year-old child wouldn't necessarily understand it. You've got to explain or lie to the 9-year-old to say, "Well, actually, I don't know what he's doing. He's just smelling the grass." So in terms of the
idol, you would lie then. You don't need to tell him. The kids don't need to know that at 9 anyway. You know what I mean?
I think that Paul means, would you lie?
I wouldn't tell what that meant. They don't need to know at that age. They'll figure it out for themselves when they grow up anyway. I don't need to, every time they see something, have to explain the actual truth on it. Because then they're not kids anymore.
But it's true what Paul's saying, though.
I'm not saying he's wrong.
Harper?
We've all got kids, like you said, and, well, luckily, they've not asked me, but if they had, what do we say? I don't know what I'd say if I'm honest.
I'll just say it's a celebration. It's no different to doing any other celebration. They're not going to ask.
Next question, why is he sniffing a line? Why is he sniffing? I'll be like, oh, that.
But they wouldn't know if they would just say the class, wouldn't they?
It's a celebration, that's it. But if they're a teenager, you educate them, you tell them what it is, and you educate them about life.
Yeah, but you could like you could pick the bones out of everything and have to explain everything if you allow that to happen. Yes, it was wrong, but we know it as adults. But you don't have to tell a 9 year old the actual truth and then go into like drugs and all that. You could you can save them for another day. All the kids are naive anyway, and kids for them it's just a celebration. Yeah, you wouldn't be happy if you saw your kid doing it. You think, oh my god, you know what I mean? Like because you know what it is. But they're like anything they copy, it's innocence, isn't it?
So when we was at school, we wasn't adults. So what did we think? Like, so what did you think at that point?
Yeah, but did any of us take any notice of that celebration when we were kids? I don't think we did.
The only thing I took notice of was Robbie Fowler used to wear a noseband, didn't it? So when I used to play football for in the school, I used to put that noseband across my nose. Yeah, so.
But it didn't make you play any better, so we'll move on.
Number eight was a difficult one between a 7 and 8, but we went with Hartson's kick to El Bergovic in the face. So the flare-up occurred in September 98 when a bad tackle in training prompted El Bergovic to throw a punch at the hearty Welshman. The response was just savage. Hartson spun around and kicked the playmaker full in the face with full force. I mean, and he was on his knees at the time. So Bergovic on his knees, looking up at Hartson, trying to say something. Hartson just spun round and full lamped him in the face with his boot. I remember the controversy at the time because it was a training ground bust up and all the papers obviously had all the media about it. He wasn't punished for it, Hartson, obviously because it was a training.
I'm surprised he didn't miss his face.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, does anyone remember that one quite vividly? Because I remember that's the first, out of the three so far, that's the one I remember quite vividly.
Yeah, again, that was probably one of the first incidents that got leaked with the media, with the cameras and stuff doing training ground or mobile phone footage and stuff like that. It was probably the first incident. You've all heard about stuff in the past before that, but it was really the first one that made it into the mainstream news of an incident that happened in the training ground that should have stayed in the training ground. If something's happened. They must have been niggling at each other. Don't like each other in the changing room. And you thought, oh, I've got my chance here. Your chin's there for the taking.
Well, obviously, Berkovic, he was a good player. So he probably thought he was a cut above the rest. And then, oh, I don't know, he just put, well, he knocked him down a few pegs.
A few pegs? He took his face off.
Berkovic done it all wrong, though. Ian Berkovic is on his knees and swung a punch while he was on his knees. He ain't even near to John Hartson's height when he's standing up. So he left himself open for a volley in the head, but it was a bit naughty. Like, it was a full-on one to the jaw. But again, it's another amazing one. I like when the fights and that happen. They are funny. But, yeah, he didn't think it through. If you're going to throw a dig, at least be on your feet because Hartson just ended him. Full pelt, volley in the jaw. Amazing.
It was a proper Mortal Kombat, like, finish him. Yeah. Just botched. Yeah, if that was in the cartoon, his head would have flown off. A good point there in terms of the leak. Because obviously, as you said, in the changing room, there was always stories that might get out from some journalists about what's happened, but it was never actual footage. As you said, I can't remember anything of footage of seeing two people in train having a ruck. Now, it's on Sky Sports within 30 seconds of it happening. But back then, the controversy in itself was, as you said, I think the leak was the first thing that was controversial almost, because you're thinking, so who's got in there and got training ground footage? Graham, anything to add on the kick in the head?
Oh, yeah. Well, I remember being on London Tonight, to be honest. It was on the London News. I agree with what Holland said there. It's a cheap shot, wasn't it, really? I mean, I know Berkovic is on his knees for a wild punch. It was nowhere near Hartson. Full smacking the chops with the laces. I mean, like Lee said earlier, I said how he didn't smash his face up, I'll never know. But just quickly about the Berkovic, I forgot all about him, for when we done the underrated. I would have loved to have chucked him in there. I forgot about him, but yeah, it was quite controversial at the time. But like you said, Paul, how he never got a fine or anything, that's it's assault, isn't it? It's a couple of assaults. So,
well, we'll come
obviously what we've been talking about. Yeah, have you ever come across anyone like you've upset whilst playing, or have you ever come across like arguing with your teammates?
Yeah, I've had rows, but not like that. You've had arguments on the pitch going mad at people and that.
So, what I'm saying, you can half understand it, obviously, not to that level.
Heat of the moment, Lee, isn't it?
I think also, as Graham said, I think it was instinct almost, but I think they've had a tackle. They've been nicking each other in training. Berkovic is down the floor. He's had a pop at Hartson and said something. Berkovic has probably swung a punch. Nobody's not going to hit him. And then Hartson just has reacted with a kick. And it was, I don't think it was an intentional.
I think he broke his eye socket.
I think it's just, if he was standing up, it wouldn't have been a kick, it would have been a punch. It's just that he was on the floor, and your instinct is to kick out at someone that's trying to attack.
Either way, I wouldn't have fancied Berkovic's chances. Arson was a big lad. You know, yeah.
So I don't know what I would have rather, kick or a punch.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying.
I probably would have took a punch.
He would have knocked Berkovic out with a punch. So either way, Berkovic's getting hurt.
So number seven in our controversial list, we've gone with Pierre van Hooijdonk going on strike. The most famous instance of a player ever going on strike in Britain. Van Hooijdonk become unhappy with a new board at Forest at the start of the 98-99 season at a perceived broken promise to strengthen the side. Van Hooijdonk demanded the transfer, but the club, knowing his talent and key role he had in keeping them up, refused his request. The player then went on strike for 6 months after realising the club weren't going to sell him. The relegation threat in Forest took him back, and Van Hooijdonk lasted until the end of the 98-99 season, where Forest ended bottom of the league.
Yeah, and they started selling all their players, didn't they, Forest? He turned up one day, Kevin Campbell was gone, Scott Gemmell, Steve Stone, all just sold in the same season. And he was like, what? Like, he was having none of that. So he said, will you sell me? And they wouldn't.
Paul, you said he was went on strike and then he came back, did you say?
Yeah, so he went on strike for the first 6 months of the season. He came back for the back end of it. I think it was the last 8 or 9 games he came back to cut, because he realised they weren't going to sell him. They came to a sort of an agreement. They would play out the last 8 or 9 games of the season, and then they sold him at the end of the season.
Yeah, I didn't realise he came back. That was all. I know he ended up at that Vitesse Arnhem, but yeah, I mean that sounds like the first sort of version of player power, didn't it? Really, when he's saying basically, I'm doing this, I'm not doing that. I remember it being the news and whatnot. Yeah, it's only until Dave said about selling Kevin Campbell, Steve Stone, Gemmell, and Colin Cooper. I didn't realise all them went. So yeah, he was pretty pissed off at the time, by the sounds of it.
Well, that was the demise of Forest then, wasn't it? Because we never see him again after that, did we?
I remember thinking, how can anybody who gets paid to play football go on strike and refuse to play the game when there's so many other people out there that would give their left leg to play football for a living? And I thought, how dare you go on strike because somebody wouldn't sell you so you could get more money and go for a higher rated team? Yeah, I just thought scumbag, in all fairness.
It's interesting because I remember it, and I'm 100% with you. I think that's what everyone thought, and the media covering it thought the same thing, and they kind of said the same thing about going on strike, disgraceful. Especially in a town like Nottingham Forest, which has traditionally obviously hard-working families, and it is very linked to the clubs and the players playing for the club. At the same time, he was promised no one would be sold, certain players would be brought in, and then he turns up in to train, and then 5 of the best players of the club have all been sold. So you would feel a bit of a broken promise. It hasn't been done since that I can remember. A player, I mean, you get players who refuse. Like, I think Costa at Chelsea, when he wanted to move, he went to reserves and stuff. But it wasn't on strike. The manager just didn't play him. He just put him in the reserves with the kids. But obviously, Forrest couldn't really afford to do that. And ultimately, it sent them down.
Paul, do you remember? Sorry to interrupt, but you make a good point there, mate. Do you remember when we were talking about David Hurst a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah.
And you made the point of Trevor Francis. You said that Hurst wanted to leave and go to Man United from Sheffield Wednesday. And you said, well, I've looked it up as well. You're totally right. Trevor Francis turned around and said, no, you're not going anywhere. I want you here. You will play for me. And just, you know, a couple of seasons later, Van Hooijdonk does the opposite. I'm not going to play, you know, F you, I'm off. So how time to change, you know, just within a couple of years. So that's like, for me, the first example of like player power, sorry. How it's starting to evolve. Not necessarily for the better, like, but, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Harper?
Player power now, it's massive. This day and age, huge, man. They're and their agents, they rule the roost, bruv.
I agree. And we'll come on to that in our later point, as we spoke about. So we will get on to that in a little bit later. But let's move on to number 6. And more of a, not a comedy moment, obviously, but the Paolo Di Canio's referee push. And if you look at our Instagram page, I've uploaded that video for everyone to have a look at. And it isn't funny, because obviously it's an official being pushed over. The comedy is the way that Alcott went down, the stumbling back and then falling down. So in the 1998 game against Arsenal at Hillsborough, Di Canio took particular dislike against a specific decision and decided the best approach was to push referee Paul Alcock. Alcott was quite frankly embarrassed in an attempt to keep his balance may have made the incident seem more comical than it actually was. But Di Canio received an 11-match ban and a £10,000 fine. And also, I mean, Di Canio has got a few moments. That's the main one. But obviously, he subbed himself off at one of the games for West Ham. When he just said, no, I'm done, and put his hand up and said to Harry to hook him. And then obviously the good sportsmanship when he, against Everton, I think it was, where the ball's come in and he's grabbed it, and I think Paul Gerrard, the goalkeeper, was injured, and he stopped the game, and they could have gone on to score a goal. So, but let's stick with the Di Canio referee push. I mean, everyone remembers that. And Graham?
Yeah, I'll start, mate. I think we'll all remember that one. I think most people of our generation and older obviously remember that. Like you said, Paul, it was the way Alcott went down, wasn't it? It was like sort of like a Bambi moment, wasn't it? You know, it was just a little push. It wasn't a massive shove. It was a little push, sort of lost his balance and went down. But yeah, I had to look back at the incident itself. Guess who started it all off? Vieira, wasn't it? Oh, Vieira kicked out of Wim Jong, a rare game that Jong actually played for Sheffield Wednesday. And then Paolo Di Canio goes and grabs the back of his Vieira's head. Next thing you know, big Martin Keown's come along and they've had a right scuffle. And then you get the red card and the push. And then you get Nigel Winterburn running over, didn't you? The old Di Canio sort of, I don't know, not lashes out, but he sort of imitates sort of a spit or something. And he basically shits himself, doesn't he? And he gets sent off. And apparently, I was reading up on it, Andy Hinchcliffe, it was at Wednesday at the time, Di Canio kept saying, am I going to get banned? Am I going to get banned? And he was like, well, yeah, something's going to happen because it's never happened in England before. And he was really shocked to say, well, this happens in Italy all the time. What's the big deal sort of thing? So he didn't think nothing of it. But yeah, you went on to the Everton game, Paul. We went like from, because I think his Wednesday career was over from then.
Yeah, it was West Ham.
He went to West Ham and he caught that ball, didn't he? That Gerrard was on the floor. But what I read about it said it was an open goal. It wasn't an open goal. It wasn't an open goal at all. He couldn't have scored from the position, not really. But yeah, he went from villain to hero instantly. But like you said, he had some other incidents, like when he was at Lazio. He's got that Mussolini tattoo on his arm and stuff like that. So he's right. He's controversial anyway, isn't he? You know.
I think you could just, instead of just going to Di Canio's referee post, just number six should just be Di Canio, because the amount of controversies. I don't think you can. I think Balotelli would probably be a similar kind of player in terms of got things that you can, as a player, mention around him.
for comedy wise, that's number one. And the push is, I love the push and I love the fall, but it's Winterburn for me. I love Winterburn. But Winterburn went over like he was going to do something big. Like, and all Di Canio did was just go towards him and he shat himself. And that's my most favourite moment part of it. I love that. And like, I'll never get bored of seeing how he shat his pants. Like, he flinched like a bitch. And honestly, that is the best bit of it all.
Point number five. This one's a bit dark, and this goes on the dark side of football. The Andres Escobar own goal. I don't know. Obviously, we're quite young for this in South American football. Obviously, the gangsters and the kidnappings. You get players now who, I think Neymar's cousin's been kidnapped and held to ransom. It happens quite rife in Brazil and that area of football. So Escobar was held responsible for the Colombia exit at the USA 94 at the first hurdle after his own goal helped the US to a 2-1 victory. In Colombia, Escobar was shot and murdered barely 2 weeks after the game, with the reasoning behind the shooting that several drug lords lost a lot of money. Does anyone remember this? And obviously, we were quite young, so I don't know who remember it obviously being there, but it's been spoken about since. Holland, do you have any recollection of this? Or
I half remember it. I mean, it's not something that you know, but yeah, no, I know about it. And I mean, for someone, it's ridiculous to me. Someone to lose their life over a football game is ridiculous. Now, I know drug laws in Colombia and all this other stuff, it's a totally different league, but the man just played football and he scored an own goal. He didn't score an own goal.
Dave, listen, lucky you never played in Colombia, because you'd have been shot every week, mate. You're
But yeah, like I say, he didn't score an own goal on purpose, for fuck's sake, and he's lost his life over a game of football. To me, that's ridiculous. Fucking ridiculous. But, you know, there's a lot that goes on in Colombia, so it's probably the norm there.
Yeah, it's sad when life takes over from just a game. That, like, it's just a game at the end of the day. So drug lords, whoever, are involved, their money's involved. How they take that into their own hands just from somebody just trying to play a game and represent their country is mental. I couldn't see it happening again, to be honest.
Imagine if you was a Colombian player, you'd be frightened, especially after the game, after that's gone on, you'd be frightened to make a mistake. And, do you know what I mean? You're thinking, bloody hell, if we get beat, so, I mean, whose head's on the chopping block next?
But I think it was a common occurrence. Looking into it, if you go and look at South American football, this is the biggest somewhat scandal, but it happens on a regular basis. There's quite a few players in South America have lost lives over games. Graham, anything to add to that one?
That was my first. Well, it would have been most of ours. All of us, we all grew up together. It's my first World Cup ever. I remember watching, you know, more than the Italian 90. The Colombia, apparently they were one of the favourites, believe it or not, going into that tournament. They'd lost one game in 26, so they had high expectations. Yeah, like you said, Paul, apparently it was drug-related. He put a statement in one of the Colombian national newspapers, basically telling the country to forget about it and move on. So that didn't help. He went out on the drink, didn't he, with a couple of his mates. They left him in a car park, and a couple of henchmen shot him X amount of times. But like Dave and Adam said, it's, you know, losing your life over a game of football, it's ridiculous. Saying, yeah, they had apparently had 120,000 turn out for his funeral, so there was a lot of mourners for him.
This one is unbelievable. It's Duncan Ferguson, and it's the headbutt against the Raith Rovers centre-half, John McStay. So Big Dunk's headbutt on Raith Rovers centre-half, John McStay, which on the pitch got no punishment, not a yellow card, not a red card, no VAR, but it resulted in a three-month prison sentence for assault. Ferguson went to prison for it, and this led to Ferguson to later retire from international football. So basically, the incident happened on the pitch. It got investigated by a criminal matter. He asked the SFA to kind of help him support the case. It's like a sporting incident. And they refused. And then when he came out of prison, he said, oh, I'll never play for Scotland again. But have you seen the headbutt? Has anyone seen the headbutt?
Not that bad, is it?
I didn't think so. We're put
I've
on
seen the, worse than that.
But I didn't think so. But, we'll start with Graham.
Yeah, like you said, I've seen the headbutt. I remember the headbutt from old. Yeah, I've seen worse. Yeah, the weird thing is you mentioned the start point. He never even got a booking for it.
No.
And he ends up going to jail. So, I mean, when you look back at Duncan Ferguson outside of football as well, I know he was a bit of a nutter on the pitch. But he'd done time before, you know. He headbutted a police officer, apparently. He beat up a, I don't know if it's a disabled fan. It was a fan on crutches anyway. He had four convictions for assault, so he was a bit of an hard nut, wasn't he? But yeah, like you say, the actual headbutt, obviously it was a headbutt, but it wasn't major. But not to even get a booking, but he ends up in jail. That's a head scratcher. So yeah, that's the comedy side of it, really, Paul. You're right.
Yeah, bro, Graham, what about, imagine if you're burgling someone's house and you look up and Big Dung's at the top of the stairs. You think, oh, well, my God.
That happened, apparently, Dave. He had burglars and he beat him up.
He battered the pair of them, yeah, burgling his house. Imagine that. Imagine robbing Big Dung's house and he's there. Oh, my life.
Mentioned on Big Dunk?
No, he's an absolute animal, but he's someone that you'd love to have in your team, let's be honest.
Oh, 1,000,000%.
Absolute animal on the pitch.
Miller, would you like to defend it against him, mate?
Yeah, I love people like that.
I expect you to say fair enough.
Yeah, I love it. Make the game more interesting.
Yeah, if you're going to play in Scottish football, a Glasgow kiss is the norm. You know what I mean? And that's all he did. He was just saying hello. You know, hello, mate. Nice to see you again. Bosh, hold that. And that was why the referee didn't give a yellow. They were just saying hello to each other.
I do think that it's interesting because we've mentioned, obviously, the Hearts and Kick, the Batty Lasso fight, and nothing with criminal was taken out with that. Because obviously, normally you assume if on the pitch within reason, we're not going to kill someone. But if you have a scrap in the fight, it's not going to cause the police to come in and arrest and then actually sentence someone to 3 months. But I think what Graham said, I don't think it was the incident that caused it. It was that he had past convictions for aggressive and assault, GBH and ABH, which obviously led to him going into prison. But what do you think about the Scottish FA not backing him? Do you think it was the right move to do? Or, you know, again, because looking at people watching the game and the influence that idols have on players, the assault, although it didn't look too bad, it was still quite a big incident at the time. Does anyone think the SFA should have stood up for him and backed him at the time?
How can you? He's just done the swing on someone. How can you turn around
how can you agree with what Dave's saying? True, you can't agree with that. Obviously, you don't want the biggest influence in Scottish football to do that. And unfortunately, he did. Just because he's like so big, you can't go along with that. No way.
But do you not think do you not think they could have said, well, hold on, we'll deal with it. We'll deal with it as an SFA. Let's say then, okay, if we put it into modern football, let's use an example and say, so if that was Harry Kane and Harry Kane did the same thing on the pitch in England in a Premier League game, obviously that he would be fined. Obviously, he'd be suspended. But do you think if there's a criminal investigation, the FA would step in and not back Harry Kane, but try and avoid Harry Kane serving time in a prison? Miller?
Paul, let me stop you there. Someone has to press charges for the police to get involved. So that Raith Rangers player would have had to have pressed charges for that to have gone where it went, for him to go to prison. That's why it's become like a criminal offence. So, because if he had dropped the charges, they wouldn't. That would have been the end of it, and they could maybe have dealt with it themselves. But because it got that far, that player must have wanted him to get done for it. That's the only way. And then when it becomes that, then the SFA can't get involved.
But the SFA didn't back him at all. Didn't give him any support through this.
Well, how can you after that if the police have pressed charges, you can't then just turn around because it's Big Dunk and say, oh, we're backing him. He stuck the Swede on him. At the end of the day, he's got to be responsible for his actions. So they probably thought, oh, we could do it back because it's Big Dunk.
Same scenario happened a couple of years back with John Terry and Anton Ferdinand. The FA couldn't get involved because the police were involved. So they done their own investigation, the FA. And then the police, because of fans, it wasn't even Anton Ferdinand in press charges. It's because a fan reported the crime or what alleged crime to the police. That's why it went that far. So like what Holland was saying, the Scottish FA, they couldn't really do anything. It's out of their hands. The referees done nothing on the pitch. So what's the Scottish FA going to do? How are they going to back him up? There's nothing to back up from the Football Association point of view. This is a criminal GBH, whatever, how it's been put forward to them. It may have been a fan at the ground. It may have been somebody watching it on a TV that's reported it. But as Graham said earlier, where he's had previous, they've obviously taken that into account. But now, as Lee was saying, would Harry Kane, if something like that happened, would Harry Kane get any support from the FA? It all depends on what it is, really, I'd say. The PFA would help. The FA will shy away from it like they do with most things. But the PFA would probably get involved and try and keep him available.
I think they're backing, mate. I think they're backing. I do really do think they're backing.
Are we going to move on? We've got our top three now. And this was quite difficult to distinguish between which would be number one to number three. But we've gone to soccer bungs or football bungs. In the 90s, it was rife to some point. It's even gone up to now with the FIFA investigation, which is obviously more the noughties and the 2010s. But in the 90s, when we first started, I remember hearing things about bungs and being front page news. And I mean, managers, again, we were use the word allegedly, people like Harry Redknapp were on the take constantly from what people would say. And the media tried to stitch him up on numerous occasions. But I'm going to focus on two. Rune Haag is a Norwegian football agent. Haag represented John Jensen and Paul Livsen during the transfers to Arsenal in the early 90s under George Graham. This led to George Graham becoming embroiled in allegations that Haag paid him a £425,000 bung to sign the players. Then you had the Marseille incident, which we spoke about briefly on our Champions League episode. So French football hasn't been without its controversies either. Marseille were found guilty of match fixing in the early 90s. They won four league titles between 89 and 92 under the guidance of Bene Tapi, as well as UEFA Champions League trophy to boot. The foundations of a great Marseille side came crumbling down in 1993 when it emerged that Tapi was involved in match fixing. Marseille were stripped of their league titles, banned from entering the Champions League and banned from entering the International Cup. Tapi received 2 years in prison while Marseille suffered financial problems and were then demoted to League Two. Miller, anything you can remember anything about that period of times or the word bungs being mentioned in football?
The only thing that rings any bells to me is Grobbelaar and the stuff that he went through. But I didn't really pay much attention to that side of it when we were younger, to be honest.
Graham?
But if they were getting a backhander, fair play to them, because they weren't getting paid the money that the guys are now.
But you say well done to them, but then that pins the game into distribute. If you're saying to someone, I'll take a bung to sign a player in George Graham's case, then you're burdening your club with a big investment in players that might be in this case John Jensen and Paul Lidersen might be crap, but George Graham signed them on the fact that he's got some money in his pocket. That's you've got responsibility as a custodian, as a manager and as a chairman to not allow that to enter the game, surely.
Yes, but you've got agents in the game that are doing worse than what say George Graham done or allegedly done in his time at Arsenal. You got to think what George Graham was doing for Arsenal at the time and the team that he was building. Was he being treated fairly, like you mentioned in the last one about Arsene Wenger? how much money he was getting. So maybe he thought, unjust, like, you ain't sorting me out, so now I need to go and make my own money.
If you change your mind.
Graham, have you got anything to add on that? I mean, that's quite a controversial start, I would say. He said, Graham?
Yeah, well, when you mentioned, do I remember the word bung being thrown about? It was on the back of the papers all the time, wasn't it? And the front. But the weird thing is about the George Graham one, he was actually sacked by Arsenal. So could you imagine if he didn't take that £400,000 bung, allegedly, what would have happened to Arsenal? Because obviously Arsene Wenger wouldn't have come in, because Arsenal weren't exactly struggling at the time. They were a mid-table side, but they were never in danger of going down. But going back to what Miller said with the Grobbelaar one, that's the one that sticks in my head more than anything. Grobbelaar, Hans Seggers and John Fashanu. I remember being in the paper a lot about them going to court against the Sun newspaper, it being overturned, and Grobbelaar being taking bungs and going bankrupt. I remember one of the goals as well, very iffy. You'll have to look at it as against Coventry. It looks like it does push it into the back of the net. But yeah, the Marseille one, Paul, if I'm perfectly honest, I don't really know anything about that. I just, doing this podcast, it sort of, I know sort of what you're on about, but I don't really know the ins and outs of that one. But yeah, the George Graham one with the bungs, apparently he was on £300,000 a year. So he got another year's wages, like, by taking that off that off Norwegian agent, did you say?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, but obviously, we know John Jensen, he was better for Denmark than he was for Arsenal, obviously. But the other guy you mentioned, Paul Iderson, no idea. Dave, you might know him, you're an Arsenal supporter. Paul Iderson, was he overrated?
No. He's getting in instead of Winterburn. I don't really remember too much about it, but I remember the George Graham thing going on, but we were kids, so we wouldn't ever really look to that. So we were really interested in his goal. Their backhanders are going on still today. I don't care what anyone says. Old Allardyce got stitched trying to get making a few quid for England manager. So, all right, bungs is probably different because, you know, that's a different sort of... But these little backhanders are still going on. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go to Graham just quickly with the Marseille one. It only came up because when I was looking at the Champions League winners... It came up and I didn't know much about it. And then when I started looking into it, I was shocked. You know, match fixing, there's a difference between a bung and match fixing, you know, because that's it's the same as betting on games, and people go, oh, we're going to bet on a game because obviously you can influence the game, and the same as that. And he went to prison, which is, again, it's quite serious. I mean, obviously it's serious, but you don't, with it, you look at FIFA and you look at the situation here. No one's gone to prison over that. And that was far more bigger than this scandal. But no one went to prison. And with the Arsenal, with the bungs, as I think Holland was saying, with George Graham and with... I think Sam Allardyce was stitched up personally. I think if you listen to the interview or the leaked video, he didn't do anything that was illegal. He was just trying to earn... he didn't need the money, but was opening up to a different avenue.
Making a bung.
Because I don't think...
I think you mean... Sorry, Paul. You think like it was a sting, like it was a setup
sort of
thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think you were known to that.
Oh,
Can I butt in?
Yeah, go on.
Ian Bishop and Trevor Morley, when they said West Ham, yeah? So apparently there was a game for West Ham. Kicked off, yeah? And Trevor Morley kicked the ball straight out. Bang. For a throw-on. Apparently, obviously, that's when it stopped... You know, this day and age, you can bet on anything, throw-ons, corners, whatever. But in that day, like, well, Ian Bishop and Trevor Morley at West Ham, so we're going back a good few years.
That's betting on football, and that's why that's obviously prohibited, and that's why. But again, you don't know who's doing what. You don't know if someone's put 50 quid or 50 grand on getting a yellow card in a game at 2-1 or whatever it would be. You can't stop that. That will be in the game, and someone leaking. I think it was recently, it was a Jack Grealish injury at Villa with a Dream Team link or something. I mean, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more. I'm surprised there's more stuff isn't leaked.
Right, listen, if us five, we're all professional footballers in the Premier League, we know what betting's like. Look, we say to our family, look, listen, have a couple of quid, I'll get booked, I'll do... Mate, it's easy money.
But then players aren't doing that because, one, they don't need the money in these leagues anyway, but it's not about the money.
But would you not do it?
Personally, no, because I think if you get the repercussion of being caught... And therefore, everything you've done put into question is not worth that. My reputation as a player, surely. But I want to go to Miller's point because Miller's almost kind of said, "Well, he took a bung at George Graham. It wasn't earning a lot of money or whatever, and that's fine." Does anyone agree with that? Does anyone actually think that they weren't looking after me as a club. So fuck it, I'll put my hand in my pocket and I'll earn a couple of quid.
I disagree with that. Go on, Harper. Listen, we all know footballers, managers, they're paid fucking far too much money, in our opinion.
Graham?
It's just not worth the hassle, is it? There are enough money as it is. It's just not worth the ag if you get caught. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, if you're on a minimum wage and you're trying to nick a few quid, just, you know, can get you by, then you can sort of understand it, because, you know, you're trying to make ends meet and that helps you have a little bit of a better life. These blokes ain't going for any of that. Do you know what I mean? So for them to just need more money than they've already got is bollocks.
They got addictions, though. Let's be fair. Like, you don't know what his background story is behind. He might have needed that money for his addictions.
Yeah, like I'm saying, that's a desperation then, Miller, isn't it?
But you're saying, oh, well, they get paid this, they get paid that. Was he the highest paid manager in the leagues at the time? No, he probably felt he was worth more than that. And he probably felt, as I said at the beginning, unjust by the club.
But back then, George Graham wouldn't have been, like, the money wasn't being chucked around that we're talking about these days. So, yeah.
I think George was sick manager. Quality.
Yeah, he was. What he was doing with the team. So he probably thought, hold up, I deserve a bit more. It's like you on a building site back when you was on the Tools Holland, thinking, hold up, I'm going to have a bit of scrap at the end of this job. I'll leave that one to the side. Try and nick a little bit on the side, see? What's wrong with George Graham?
I was scraping by. George Graham weren't.
Graham, I'm going to bring you in on this. Who are you siding with? Are you under the middle of the side of Graham? Well, actually, you don't know what your situation was. Maybe you need the money and the ends justified the means.
No, I was going to say, I'm scared of the law, any breaking law anyway, so I would have been with Paul and Dave. But what Miller's saying, look, he's brought himself into disrepute, and he really not so much Arsenal or the other players. He might have been doing it for X amount of years, X amount of months. He's had his fun. He got caught and he got punished for it. So if he wants to do that, let him carry on. You know, not everyone's doing it, but I personally wouldn't do it. I'm with Paul and Dave there. It's just not worth it. So pros and cons of both, you know, but... Yeah, not for me.
A bit of controversy caused in the group there by Mr. Miller. So moving on, we've got two more points to go. Number two is the King Eric Kung Fu kick. So this was a kick that was heard around the world and handed Blackburn the title in 95. Eric Cantona's right boot to the face of the Crystal Palace fan Matthew Simmons. Cantona was handed a worldwide ban of 8 months for his actions.
8 months justified.
Excessive?
It could have been longer, if I'm honest. Oh, come on, man. Like, listen, you are a professional. You get paid a lot of money. You are a professional in the end day. Did it cost you the league that season?
It did, yeah. It definitely cost Man United the league. We would have definitely won it that season if Cantona wasn't banned. I can't say definitely because things could change, but I think it definitely
helped. Of course.
Was Roy Keane player for you that season? Just say it. Sorry, mate.
Well, I'm getting that fishing rod out, boy. It's going to reel in a whopper.
Graham, what do you remember of the Cantona Kung Fu? I remember we were at school at the time. It was big dude came in. It was a great story.
Well, we talked about heat at the moment earlier, didn't we? And the Hartson thing. Yeah, sorry, heat at the moment. The guy that was I think he was calling him racist names and he was saying stuff about him coming from France and stuff like that. Apparently, he was a member of the National Front anyway. So this guy is a bit of a knobhead. He'd been involved with the law, etc. But I just think Cantona it was heat at the moment. He'd had enough. He snapped. He'd done the kung fu kick and he got punished for it. Personally, I can't see anything wrong with it. There again, maybe once again, the woke community, as they call it now, at the time would have come out and said, he's a professional. Kids look up to him. He can't be doing things like that, etc. But as an adult, I applaud Cantona for doing it. And he's actually come out. He doesn't regret it. He said, I should have hit him harder. And it was one of the best moments of his career. I don't know about if Man United would have won the league. That's opinion, because Lee Harper's Blackburn were doing pretty well. But no, on the actual incident, yeah, I applaud Cantona for it.
With Graham there, you're nodding your head, Holland.
I don't know what you said. It's to do with Man United and me not liking them and stuff like that. It's got nothing to do with it. I think he was absolutely right to do it. I don't even think he should have got a ban. The fans... feel that their fans take the absolute piss when it comes to people, right? You'll never talk to someone like that in the street and not get a smack in the mouth. They get away with murder. You like, what gives them the right to start slagging people's mums, their race, all this other stuff, just because they're in a crowd and they're watching a game of football. For me, he deserved what he got. I feel it was well justified. People, just like, especially with Twitter, think they've got a license just to speak to people wherever they like. But if you're standing in the street, you talk to someone like that, you'd be prepared to get a punch in the mouth. So I again, with Graham, what Graham said, I absolutely agree with everything he said. He deserved to get a kick in the chops. Mm. And I love it. And you know what? Like I say, it didn't stop people from fucking carrying on the way they carry on, because it still goes on today.
Agree with what Holland said, but I'm also going to flip it. You do that in a workplace, now you're getting the sack. He never got the sack, he got banned. So yes, 100% he should have done it. He should have done it harder. Just because you pay to go and watch football does not give you the right to call people whatever names under the sun. They don't. Yes, it's professional. The players are professional.
Look, racism and that, it is rife. You got to let the other people deal with that, Adam.
All right. So in your workplace, somebody comes into your workplace and starts saying whatever about you. You just going to say, hold up, boss, yeah, man.
Well, then technically, you should tell the governor.
Yeah, but are you really going to do that? Let's be honest. When emotion and stuff like that's involved, then you've got a bit of a temper.
Myself, no. But I've got a workforce of fucking 10 people.
Miller, that's a good point you've made there. I'll ask you a question based on what you're saying. If you was the owner of Manchester United at that time, saying as Paul was saying, they should have or could have won the league with Cantona, unfortunately, they missed him for X amount of games. You personally, if you was the owner of that club after what he'd done, would you have sacked Cantona?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. I personally don't believe you, but no. Fair enough.
Yeah, I would have. You don't do things like that in the workplace, as Lee was saying, in front of thousands on TV, live TV at the time as well, I think it was. You can't do things like that. Yes, he's a professional.
The way Adam's saying, he has to say you got to sack him. 1,000,000%. The way he's gone about it, he would have to sack him.
Just because he's a footballer does not give him the right to. Yes, he's right. In my opinion, he was right to react in a certain way, because of the amount of abuse that he's taken over the years. And at that precise moment, who knows what was said to him? And people have emotions and they snap.
Mm.
But what I'm saying is, as Lee said, being about being professional, that's where it comes into it. He's taken that professionalism away from it. So he should have got sacked.
I completely disagree with sacking.
You would do, Man United.
No. Whatever.
Yeah, sure.
I think everyone's right. Everyone's got what they're saying, and they're all right in what they're saying. I think the big controversial we see is he's kicked out, and you can't be doing it in a workplace. If you're using the workplace as an example, yes. If I work in a Sainsbury's and someone gives me abuse, can I jump up and kick him in the face using the kung fu kick? No, I can't. I'll be sacked.
Why is it okay to do it?
No, it's not. I'm not saying it's okay.
No, see, the thing is with football, is that right? It's what will happen here is Cantona gets sacked and then he goes and signs for City and wins them the league.
Had he kicked a black man or another race of any generation, do you think it would have gone leave like it could it been like rape? Cantona is now racist.
I don't think in the 90s, I think it was not as frowned upon as it is now. I know where you're going with it, possibly here today, but Paul?
I think it's a really good point. I think if it's done now and it's a black or Asian minority, I think it might be looked at completely differently. I think he's absolutely right. But I also think that the fan and the people around hit the fan would have stepped up and had a lot more to say, whether it was a racist incident in terms of what the fan was saying. I think back then it was, as Graham said, that he was allegedly part of the National Front. And it was a racist incident on Cantona. Whereas I think if the same scenario and it was a racist incident towards Cantona and he was black, it would have made no difference because the racial side of it was being thrown at Cantona from the black fan. So I don't think it would make a massive difference. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been a different matter in this day and age. Okay, guys, so we've got down to number one now. And we had a bit of a brief chat about the number one. And I think we were trying to struggle in what to put. And I kind of put a case towards the Bosman ruling. Bosman won his 1995 court case at the European Court of Justice over the issue of freedom of movement for footballers, arguing that footballers, just like any other profession, should be protected by employment law, and he argued that football clubs prevented freedom of labour and therefore restraint of trade. This led to the players allowing their contracts to run out and move from one club to the next completely free. Fees that it cost to go through the European Court bankrupted him. And the PFA or the French, the Swiss equivalent or Belgium equivalent didn't back him. No big player movement backed him and supported him. It bankrupted him. He was arrested later on and split from his wife and was done for got arrested for a battery and assault. He's an alcoholic or alleged alcoholic or has been fond of the booze. And he set up these T-shirts, and it was kind of like the Fake the Bosman or something like that to try and promote that he's done this massive change of footballers millions upon millions of pounds. And he sold one T-shirt to his solicitor. No one's come to try and kind of to his aid to try and support him through his alcoholic period, if that is the case. It's a very sad case of one individual taking on one of the biggest sports in the world, winning, and then his life being turned upside down because of it. Yeah, for me, it's massively controversial. It's a sad state of affairs, and I think the Bosman ruling changed football.
Yeah, well, the Bosman ruling killed Arsenal, by the way, because we've never got to grips with the fact that our players leave on the Bosman or 1 year before. We lost how many players? We lost Van Persie to your club. Oh, God, the list is endless.
We paid down to 1 year.
Yeah, no, but it was his last year, so you got him on the cheap.
That's the board's fault, Dave, surely.
No, it is the board's fault, Lee, but I'm saying that ruling, that Bosman ruling, they get down to 1 year left of your contract, or 18 months, you can then start talking to other clubs. So the club panic and sell him on for cheap, which is how you got Van Persie.
No, Arsenal, they were a big club. They never renewed contract.
Sol Campbell was probably the biggest player that moved, and Arsenal benefited from it. Because
that was a good one.
Yeah, to be honest, always years ago, I always heard the Bosman ruling saying. I didn't even know what it was, to be honest. It wasn't until recent times. Is it like an anniversary last year or something about it?
I think there was, yeah. There was some something about it.
Vaguely remember at the time it going to the European court in Luxembourg. I didn't really know a lot about it. I mean, it's sad to see what's happened to him today. Unfortunate that maybe, I don't say the players have to, but he's made a big statement in how players can move in between clubs now. He should get some sort of help, you know? Like you're saying, it's quite sad how it's happened, but I just know he's changed the football transfer signings for the better. It's evolved, if you like, you know?
For the better, did you say? Sorry, Graham?
For the better, isn't it?
Do you think the Bosman ruling's made football better?
I'm not being funny enough, Paul, but I know you don't because you're all about business and stuff like that. But, you know, like for people like youngsters and stuff like that, new players coming to clubs is an exciting moment. Like, so they're not, so with that Bosman ruling, it'd be hard for players to move between clubs, and transfers is a big thing. Like transfer deadline day, people love that. And, you know, without this Bosman ruling and players being able to be not freely moved, but more or less, you don't have any of that excitement. Now,
about the Bosman ruling, they were saying about contracts and that. Listen, if you're like good at your job, then you get a contract. If you're that good, I don't think the Bosman ruling comes into you if you're that good and you're loyal.
You're saying, what do you mean? Sorry, are you saying that it's a good move or a bad move, Harper?
Well, it's a good move. The Bosman's good because, listen, if the club who you're playing for respects you and they want you to keep, they won't let your contract run down.
But no, hold on.
If they thought you were shit and old, then yeah, you're gone, bro.
Lee, what happens if the player doesn't want to renew it then?
Just say that. Say I employ you, yeah?
You couldn't afford
and
me.
After, I put you on a 5-year contract, and after I don't know, 3 years, you're hitting all the fucking heights that I want. If I don't renew your contract, and you think you're underworth, why are you going to want to work for me? You're going to want to go elsewhere.
But what if a bigger firm comes in who can offer him more money than you can afford? Then you've lost the opportunity to earn something off the person you've trained.
Yeah, but I've not offered him a contract, Paul. That's what I'm saying.
I say, fuck you, Lee. I don't want to play for you. I'm going to run my contract down and go for free. Your club gets fuck all. Well, I've got a question for you then. You see Van Hooijdonk's, the strike, him going on strike. Now, if the Bosman rule didn't come in, would you see a lot more players go on strike to try and force moves?
No, because I think the clubs... Okay, so the stance for me, and then I'll go on to Graham's... to administrate after. I think the Bosman rule... The problem was is the clubs had all the power, players had no power, and then you could sit them in the reserves or not give them a contract, not reward them. And then the Bosman ruling changed everything, and all of a sudden, a 5-year contract isn't really a 5-year contract. It's only worth 3 years, because after the first 3 years of your contract, then you have to renegotiate for the next 12 months to get them out of their 2-year period. And Anelka was the king of this, of moving clubs, having a contract, and then kind of getting to a stage where it's like, right, well, I'm selling, we're not going to move. Player power, it changed everything, because then all of a sudden, everyone wanted to get these 5-year big money contracts, get to year 3 and go, right, well, let's negotiate again now. Winston Bogard was a good one at Chelsea that they signed, and he was on a fat 5-year contract. He got to the club and he weren't very good. And they sat in the reserves and they tried to. Well, yeah, but they tried selling him and he went, I'm not going anywhere because I'm on 160 grand a week. And if I go anywhere else, I'm on 80 grand a week. So I think the Bosman ruling, I think it was a good conversation to have. I don't think it's been implemented how it was planned to be implemented when it first came around. Okay, Pogba is a good example now. Pogba has 2 years, or De Gea recently. Pogba had 2 years.
Wait, De Gea's on. He's the highest owner at Man United right now.
Yeah,
that's bullshit. He should never be that. He should never be that.
But you either lose him on
$10.
But okay, the De Gea situation is a very good example.
I'm losing him, man. $350 a week. Lose him.
But you got to take into account the other side of that is that to replace a goalkeeper like De Gea, you'll have to pay a transfer fee of 60, 70, 80 million plus. So you can sign a player who you've already got at the club and pay him 350. Say it's a £45 million contract over 3 years. Or you go and sign a goalkeeper who's probably going to be on similar wages of 220 anyway, and it's going to cost you £70 million in the transfer fee.
Henderson ain't on what anywhere near what they're on. And he's a good keeper.
Yeah, but he's unproven and he's already at the club. We've already paid a fee for him.
Hey, shit anyway, but and that's for another day.
Yeah, like you said about it was a good debate to have. It's just been implemented the wrong way, as you said. I think it's ruined the game and gave too much power to the players and their greedy agents. They're moving about, not showing no loyalty to the clubs. Like, as you said, you've got guys going through youth systems now and learning their trade and straight away thinking, all right, someone's looking at me. I could go nick a transfer fee.
I agree with that, Adam.
They could go get a transfer fee. They could go get another 5-10 grand a week from somewhere else. But on the other hand, if they are locked into a contract the way it used to be, you are basically owned by the club. You don't have the right to hand in your notice. You can put in a transfer request and stuff like that, but you couldn't, in any day-to-day society like we are, if we don't like the place where we work and we don't feel like we're getting anywhere in our career with them, we could hand our notice in and move on, when the players couldn't previously. So that's why I think it was a good thing that the players had some sort of right over their contract. It's just been abused with the money and how freely the agents
they had an option, Adam. Yeah, they had an option.
That's what it is, the option.
Yeah,
that was the good thing, but that option's been taken advantage of, which I think ruined the game.
I agree. Do you think the contract should maybe have something like if you have a, I mean, I'm not comparing a player to a plant machinery because that's ridiculous. But the depreciation value of a player over longevity or the increase of value. Do you not think if you sign a 5-year contract, there should be a predetermined base fee that if you go into year 5 of your contract and you don't choose to stay with the club, we can demand that there's a nominal fee that you pay the club or the club pays you. Something that kind of, at the end of the 5 years, you know, they're going to leave and there's a fee. I'm going to drop it there. That's our number one, was the Bosman ruling.
Quiz, guess the goalkeeper. So here's the first one. Here's the first clue to all five of you. So basically, if you think you know it, stick your hand up, okay? Right, the first clue. I was born in Acapulco, Mexico. Okay, second clue. I scored 35 goals during my club career.
Harper, George Campos.
Correct.
Well done. Jesus.
I'm going to get that from two clues. I was born in the Soviet Union. Second clue. I played internationally for the USSR, the CIS, and Russia. Clue number three. I played in the Premier League for 8 seasons. Clue number four. I had a brief spell with Celtic in 1999. Last clue, number five. I am an Olympic gold medalist. Who am I?
Miller. Did he play for Newcastle?
No.
You're feeling Pavel Cernacek?
Yeah.
Dimitri Karin. Right. Clue number one. I was born in County Donegal, Ireland.
Stop. McGrath, Shay Given.
Incorrect. Right, okay, clue number two. I made my pro debut on my 21st birthday. Clue number three. I am a one club player playing all of my 641 games in Scotland.
Miller.
Go on.
Patty Bonner.
Well done, Miller. It's Packy Bonner.
Hey, Ed. Respect, bro.
You got it after three clues. All right. Okay, then. Miller's got a question right and Arpa's got a question right. So we'll go for the final one for the winner. Let's see if you can get it. Clue number one. I was born in Czechoslovakia. Clue number two. I was number one at both Sparta and Slavia Prague. Lee Arpa.
I'm going to go Jan Stayskill.
After two clues. Yes, correct. It's Jan Stayskill.
So thanks everyone for listening. Please follow us on our Instagram page at The Phoenix Five Show, or alternatively, you can email us at thephoenixfiveshow@gmail.com.
Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.